Usually when we talk about a failing system, we imagine like dramatic corruption or some massive ideological
Right,
collapse.
like some huge public scandal.
Exactly. But what if the reason a vital safety net breaks down is actually just, well, a lack of cars?
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a 2015 strategy document from the Western Cape Department of Social Development.
And our mission here is to unpack exactly how a government diagnoses and attempts to fix a totally broken child protection system.
Because the stakes here could not be higher for you listening. We are talking about vulnerable children literally falling through the cracks.
Yeah, and we're looking at the surprisingly mundane, really administrative reasons why that actually happens on the ground.
So to understand the strategy they built, you really have to look at the stark reality in 2015. And the findings in this report are, well, they're alarming.
Oh, completely. Social workers were just failing to visit foster kids, and adoptions were deeply protracted because of this like massive multi-agency gridlock. Right, and there's this one statistic that just blew my mind. Only 18% of Form 22 reports were actually being finalized.
And just for context, Form 22 reports are the initial reports for alleged child abuse or neglect. So yeah, only 18% finalized is just staggering.
It's like walking into an emergency room, right? The doctors are there, the lights are on, but administrative chaos means critical patients are just left waiting indefinitely in the lobby.
That is a great analogy. It really makes you wonder how a vital safety net degrades to that point.
Exactly. So how does it, I mean, how did it get so bad?
Well, the report shows the degradation wasn't born of malice. It was just systemic gridlock. Shifting focus from the symptoms to the root causes shows these systems were failing under very practical weights.
Yeah, for government offices, the top blockages were literal shortages of vehicles to physically reach these kids, which was paired with, massive administrative workloads.
And while the government can eventually just authorize a budget for cars, the NGOs doing half the groundwork were completely trapped.
Because they were constrained by incredibly restrictive funding models, right?
Right. Funding that just wouldn't cover basic operational costs like transport or security. And because they couldn't offer competitive salaries, staff turnover was astronomical.
So cases simply got lost in the shuffle.
Exactly. And that high turnover directly fuels another major issue detailed in the report, which they called the juniorization of social work offices.
Juniorization. I mean, I want to push back on the priority here, though. A lack of vehicles is a bottleneck, sure, but isn't the true failure point a lack of experienced mentors?
How do you mean?
Well, you have all these junior workers suddenly filling offices trying to execute massive legal mandates like the Children's Act without a guide. That seems, way more critical than a fleet of sedans.
I mean, mentorship is vital, absolutely. But honestly, you can have the best mentor in the world, and it just won't matter if you literally cannot drive to a vulnerable child's house to check on them.
Okay, fair point. You need the physical infrastructure first.
Right. But you are right that once they actually arrive at the house, that juniorization becomes the primary hurdle.
So if the problem is a bunch of junior staff drowning in complex legal mandates, how do you actually train them without just adding to their massive administrative burden?
This is where the department's proposed interventions are surprisingly grounded. Instead of sweeping ideological shifts, they went with tactical management.
Like step one, budget for exactly 61 new vehicles to solve that physical access issue.
Exactly. And step two was getting access to the National Social Security Database, the SASA-SOCPEN system.
Because instead of relying on isolated office spreadsheets, they needed a single integrated digital net to track foster cases across different departments.
Yeah, so kids didn't just disappear from the record. And step three actually tackled your point, that mentorship gap. They mandated supervisory agreements.
Wait, is that just more HR paperwork?
No, it structurally tied a senior manager's performance review to the success of their junior workers. It literally forced mentorship to happen by making managers directly accountable for the junior staff's case completion.
That is so smart. Another detail that really stood out to me was how they handled retraining staff on the actual laws. They decided to distribute standard operating procedures strictly one per week.
Right, the SOPs. giving an overwhelmed worker a massive legal textbook just doesn't help at all.
It functions like drip irrigation for learning. Hmm. You give them a lifeline, one clear procedure at a time.
Exactly. So they can actually absorb the new protocol without drowning in more paperwork.
Yeah.
It really acknowledges the reality of their daily stress.
So for you listening, the core insight here is that fixing deeply complex, life or death social issues often hinges on distinctly unglamorous administrative solutions.
Yeah, progress here looks like reliable cars, integrated digital databases, and clear management structures. The grand vision just doesn't matter if the mechanics of getting the job done are broken.
Absolutely. But that leaves us with a final thought to chew on. This strategy was drafted in 2015 to fix immediate administrative crises.
Right.
When that metaphorical emergency room relies so heavily on perfectly aligning government funding, multiple agencies, and NGOs, is it ever truly fixed?
Is it just temporarily stabilized?
Exactly. Keep that in mind next time you look at the mundane systems holding our world together.